Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Pretty overwhelming. Our listeners want the one seed. Screw the path of least resistance. Give me the games at Minute Maid. ABC Eric, I want the one seed, but day in, day out, when Dusty's... I wanted to get off Dusty, but here we go again. When Dusty's playing around with the lineup, it makes me wish for the path of least resistance, just in case Dusty tries to Dusty during the playoffs. I would hate to have home field advantage just for Dusty to screw us out of an ALCS or World Series.
Pretty much sums it up.
What are you doing after the show? Are you going to play a little craps, but blackjack maybe? Maybe with some No Limit Hold'em, 2-5 maybe is usually my game?
What do we call the Vegas pool area?
The arena? Resort or premium entertainment that's wet, maybe? What he said?
I would like to sample that. Then I would like to get a good meal and go to the sports book.
I like a good Cleavers. You ever had Cleavers? It's off the strip. It's a little off the beaten path. Unbelievable steaks.
What was the 8 steakhouse inside of the Palm for a while? Really good. We used to go there.
I went there once. I forget the name of it, though. No. I didn't go to the one in the Palm. I went to the one in, what's the one up the strip? Like all the way to the very top? Aria.
Oh, the Aria. It's been a while since I've been to Vegas.
Actually, I don't think it was Aria. Whatever. Anyways, yeah. Do our listeners like Las Vegas? 713-780-ESPN. Simple question. Do you like Las Vegas? 713-780-3776. But it's more important about the listeners, I think.
Well, we could all be there together.
Do you like Las Vegas? 713-780-3776.
You know how we like to party.
I would like to play a little Hold'em right now.
Us old guys can like party with the best of them.
Yeah. What is old?
Gentle Ben at the outdoor...
Define old.
Establishment.
Brendan, how old are you?
29.
Okay. Yeah,
going on 56.
I lost too much money yesterday to be playing any
games
in Vegas.
You lost money betting on Malik Willis.
No, the problem is I didn't bet on Malik Willis enough. He had a good day.
Yeah, you know what?
He really did.
I feel like I missed an opportunity here. Mike Vrabel disagrees. Mike Vrabel thought Malik Willis played like poo. He had some thoughts about Malik Willis after the game. He said he didn't like that he wasn't throwing the ball more. Shots fired.
Rushing touchdown, though.
Did he have a rushing touchdown?
Is that all just part of being... You got to be hard on the rookies.
We missed an opportunity, and I'm going to say it's because we weren't in Vegas. We should have bet the Baltimore Ravens -3. They never lose preseason games.
They sure don't.
The preseason juggernaut that is the Baltimore Ravens, they are the very, very best to preseason exhibition football.
So, so true.
They never lose. People were saying that they like Vegas. Do you like Vegas? Simple question. This isn't a trick question. 713-780-ESPN. Do you like Las Vegas? 713-780-3776. I had an eventful morning. As you might know, I had my car stolen probably a month ago now, right?
Yes.
Probably a month ago. So anyways, I'm still having to go through the headache of all of that stuff. One of the things that I didn't realize is that I'm an idiot. We all know that. I had my title in my car. So my car was stolen. It's been recovered. I'm currently in the car that I had stolen. So I have gotten it back, but I lost the title. So today I had to go to the DMV, not once, but twice, to try to pick up a title. So I went to the one in my neck of the woods to try to pick it up.
The big one, the super one?
No, that was the second stop.
Oh, okay.
The first stop was up in the Woodlands area. So I went there and they're like, oh yeah, there's only one spot that you can get the physical title from a location. Everything else is like online. You have to, you know, do the whole email process, but it takes up to 2 weeks. And I'm like, let me just see if I can knock this out before I have to deal with the whole internet 2 week process. I want to get it done fast. Just cross it off the checklist. I got other things that I'm having to worry about here over the next few days. So they led me to the big one, which is right up the road. It's not that far from the, it's right up 610 from the station. So I went there.
I thought there was one like, isn't it in the Spring area?
There's a lot of DMVs, but
this is the monster one. Lisa and I went to, like, looks like it could, like,
you know what?
It's like on George R. Brown.
It's like close to Kirkendall.
Yeah.
Like Spring Cypress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was going to say Spring Cypress.
They don't have they don't do the physical title.
Okay.
There's only one DMV in the city of Houston, unless this, you know, young lady was lying to me, that you can get the physical title on site that day.
Okay.
And it's the one right here off of 610. So I go and I pull a number and it's like 874. They're at like 7-11. So I'm like, oh my goodness, how long am I going to have to be waiting here? I'm like, so I gave myself a cutoff time. I got there around 9:15.
Dropped a few business cards, said, you know who I am?
Of course not. Okay. No, I don't play that card. That's, no, absolutely not. Asking. But anyway, so I get there at 9:15. And I give myself a cutoff time at 11 o'clock. If it's not 11, like anything past 1 minute past 11, I'm leaving. I'm out of there. I can't afford to wait. I'll just do it another day. So I sit there and I'm like doing the math. I'm pacing it out. I'm like, this isn't going to happen. Like I'm on pace for like 11:15. But there was a late surge and I was able to get it in around 10:57. But the people there, like there's professional people there that like get titles for
people.
You got
in at 10:57. Did you handle all the business and turn it around in time to get out of there like at 11:01?
Dude, they did it really fast.
I guess so.
Once I got to the window, they handled it within 5 minutes. Like they were quick with how they handled it.
Good for you.
It took forever to get it done. But dude, there's like professional people that get titles for people. I was started to talking to one guy, and he's like, oh, I could have done that for you. I was like, well, what would you charge? Just curious. He's like, $75. So you can hire somebody to go get the title for you. Don't have to wait in line and everything? $75. This dude had...
That might be worth it.
This dude had like yard chairs. He was working on a bag of pretzels. He had a big Yeti. He was talking with his wife that they were going to order Papa John's. Like, they were basically living in the DMV.
That's a quality side hustle.
They were living in the DMV. I don't think it was their side hustle, but...
What do you mean?
I think it's their professional job.
It doesn't matter. It's still, regardless. I think it's their permanent hustle. Full-time job, sitting in lawn chairs, eating Rolled Golds ordering pizza.
That's what they were doing.
It could be a lot worse.
It was quite fascinating.
You think people come up to them and hammer them about bad takes on Dusty?
Probably not.
When I moved down here, Jeremy,
I
had to go through a similar, not totally same process, but similar process of moving all my information down here. I was not prepared. It's so much simpler in Michigan. Like, there's a one-stop shop for everything related to your car. I had to stop at, like, three or four different places to get everything done, and it was just, like, I couldn't believe it was so much more complicated. And it was same situation. Like, I went to one place. They're like, oh, you can't do that here. You got to go to this one, and then you could come back here to do that.
It was it's a headache. It's a headache. It's one of the worst things you could possibly spend your Friday morning doing. Here's another interesting thing. Any morning doing, especially a Friday, though, because you want Fridays to be good. The criminals, the dudes that stole my car, they took my front license plate, but they left the back one. I can't figure it out. I asked the cop about that, and he's like, I can't. I got nothing. I have no idea why they would do that.
Why would you do that?
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know.
Because the back one's the one that is most visible no matter where you drive. That's why they said there's this big influx in paper plates that are basically just falsely prepared paper plates and that they're starting to crack down on it because... All they do is just go to your printer and slap and create some gibberish number that looks close to the paper plate of someone else, and they slap it on the back of the car, and everybody goes, "Oh, they haven't got their license yet," and let them go.
Yeah, why? I don't get it. I don't understand at all why they would have taken the front license plate instead of the back. I hope it wasn't Dick Willie. 713-780-ESPN 713-780-3776. Texans are going to play a preseason football game tomorrow. They were over at NRG yesterday having a little like family night, like the Packers do. Because I mean. You think of blue blood organizations of the NFL. You think of the top two, Packers, Texans, probably right there fighting tooth and nail.
Really?
Yeah. Why are you grinning over there?
Because I 50% agree with you. I 50% agree with you. And I 50% think you're nuts.
Yeah, I am. Just ask anybody. Anybody that's went to training camp, they've talked a lot about Brandon Cooks, a professional football player looking good playing professional football. They've talked about Derek Stingley, a new professional football player looking good playing professional football. But... A lot of the talk is that Brandon Cooks looks in a league of his own at camp. So is that more of a testament of Brandon Cooks?
ESPN, did you say it was the ESPN that had their most underrated player on every team?
Yeah, I did see that.
And it was Brandon Cooks.
He's underrated.
Underrated? He's had 6,000-yard seasons.
But people don't put him in the same class as other people that have that type of resume. I agree with that.
I don't think he's underrated on the team. I think he might be underrated in terms of being considered one of the upper echelon number ones on an NFL team.
Agree. I think if the people in the city of Houston that pay attention to the Texans, they wouldn't. Their answer to most underrated would not be Brandon Cooks.
Exactly.
If you ask the other 29 cities, the 31 cities, their opinion of the Houston Texans, who's the most underrated, they probably don't even know who John Gernard is. So they're going to say Brandon Cooks. So from a national perspective, that makes sense to me. From a local perspective, you say Brandon Cooks, I think you're probably like, okay, that guy's an idiot. He's not paying attention to the
Texans.
He's
one of the only guys that the local people can hang their head on and go, there's a veteran guy that still has value that can still do his job.
I think it's Gernard. I think Grenard. And Grenard even might be too like casual of an answer.
I think a lot of people nationally slept on Grenard and still, after the year he had last year, aren't very well versed in terms of how good he actually was on a bad team.
I think he's going to be really good, especially next year once they team him up with J.J. Watt.
Here we go.
I'm kidding. But anyways, that question I asked you, Brandon Cooks, looks like he's in a league of his own. Not professional women's baseball, which they're bringing back, by the way. Is that more of a testament to him, or is it the opposite?
More or less than Little League?
I'm going to give it a shot.
Okay.
That movie was great.
I'm not talking about the movie now.
I know.
I'm talking about, are you going to watch women's professional baseball more than you would watch Little League?
You got it wrong. They're bringing back a league of their own, a movie, as a television show.
Well, if they did bring back women's professional baseball, would you watch it more or less than Little League?
Equal.
Oh, God.
Equal. Okay. I once watched a professional women's team at Fenway when I was 8 years old. I think it was the Silver Bullets. I think Coors sponsored them. I think John Granato was the manager.
I heard of a Coors Light Silver Bullets team. I didn't realize it was a women's professional
It
team.
Was. They would play like men pro teams, but like independent league.
Okay.
And we went to a Red Sox, I think Orioles game, and it was a day game. Watched the day game, and then they had a doubleheader for anybody that wanted to stay. And it was the Silver Bullets women's professional team against some man, men independent team.
Really?
Yeah, I can't remember who won. Huh. But yeah, it was. Yeah, it was
My dad was big on, when we were kids, taking us to all those things. You ever heard of the King and His Court?
Nope.
So the King and His Court, and obviously growing up in the Midwest in Milwaukee, softball was like a major deal. The King and His Court was a guy named, I think his name was Eddie Fainter. It was him and I think three or four other guys, and they would take on anybody's softball team with 10 guys on the field, and they would whoop their ass. And they were sponsored by Budweiser, and they'd come in with these, red, white, and blue uniforms and whatever, and they would basically have four or five guys on the field, and they would beat every team. They were like the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Nationals, but it was, get your best local team out there, and we'll whoop their ass.
Well, they hit dongs?
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have the rule where you can only get, like, one? You get plus one?
No. It was because they were playing on the – there's evidently a professional
softball distance. I have a buddy who plays pro – slow pitch softball.
Yeah, and it's intense. And boy, these guys, it was to see the spacing on the field and everything like that, too. It was, my dad used to love watching those guys because my dad played slow pitch softball into his 50s.
Yeah. Did you ever play the little beer league?
When I got done playing college ball and I was working in Portland for the Blazers and I didn't know anybody, I had to try out, which I thought was a joke, right after playing college baseball for this softball team that a guy recommended me
for. Well, you couldn't hit. You're a PO.
No, okay. Well, I don't know what tape you were watching. But after I tried out and made the team, it was like we were competitive. We played for state nationals. We traveled up the West Coast. Everything was sponsored. It was like, it was awesome. It was like playing pro ball, but playing softball.
Yeah.
So I come here. I'm like, I want to keep playing softball. And then I realized that guys next to me are getting ripped up on beer and cigarettes before they even
shaved bats
in the middle of games and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't quite the same as the softball I played in Oregon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of bowed out in softball after that.
I played beer league softball. I batted last, and they stuck me behind the plate. They hated me.
You played catcher in softball?
I'm kidding. But I did play a game against
Adam.
Did
you go 2 for 4?
No, 2 for 5. I hit 400, okay, which was the same as my lifetime high school batting average.
I was trying to compare it.
I played a few games with Adam Dunn, by the way.
Big Adam Dunn.
Adam Dunn.
It was from the Red?
Yep, big old Adam Dunn. 400 and I think 40 career home runs playing beer league softball with a bunch of hacks. Imagine that. Imagine how far he was hitting the baseball or the softball.
By the way, I said Washington Nationals. I meant Washington Generals.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Art.
Very good. All right, Brandon Cooks. He looks like he's in a league of his own. But is that more of a testament to him, or is it more of a testament to the rest of the Houston Texans defense? Because it goes both ways. 713-780-ESPN. Skiller B's on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's a Friday, so you know what I'm doing at the end of the night. I'm having a drink. I'm thinking vodka. It's a little warm today, so I'm going to go with a refreshing drink. I'm going to go with the vodka. But if you like gin, you can get some of that. If you like bourbon, they got that too at the tasting room in Alvin. You know I'm talking about Gentle Ben Spirits, who does it better than anybody. Gentle Ben line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative Presedo craft technology that's better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben and compare it to your favorite brand. You're going to taste the big difference that I did, which ever since I have been, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is so smooth. It is so clean. It eliminates that burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You should enjoy that sucker. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. Also online at gentleben.com. If you're in the Pearland area, stop by Broadway Liquor on the way home. You're over in Beaumont, Check out Deb's Liquor. Also, if you're at Minute Maid, they carry it in the Diamond Club, the vodka and the gin, which is fantastic. Also, that Tasting Room and Bourbon, it's great for their bourbon, the Tasting Room and Alvin, I should say. Fantastic. 94-proof bourbon, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year, and exclusive to the Tasting Room and Alvin. Also, if you're looking for a place to host your fantasy football draft, take it up a notch. Have it out at that Tasting Room in Alvin. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Twitch is just roasting me for keeping my car title in my car. I mean, it's a car title. Why wouldn't you put it in your car? It's where it should live.
Well, at least you keep your title. Wallet in your car.
Well, about that.
Oh. Whoops.
Basically live out of my car. Anyways, we're...
And keep your personal documents filed.
Yeah. It's been a rough month.
Yeah.
We're going to just try to get better and improve. You know, take it one day at a time, learn from our mistakes, and try to get better the next day. Anyways, Brandon Cooks has looked good at training camp. Pro football player looking good playing pro football. The defense, though, professional football players, that have not looked great playing pro football because Brandon Cooks is roasting them. He's toasting them. Training camp over. Texans in preseason mode. Preseason game tomorrow at
NRG
Stadium.
Was that league sanctioned and approved?
What's that?
Being able to say we're not in training camp anymore?
I don't know.
Remember it was a controversy a year ago when they didn't like the media coverage with Deshaun. So they decided we're going to regular season mode.
That is very deliberate, yeah. That's deliberate based on like media attention
right.
And having the media there and how much they're watching and how long they can be there. So that, right. that very much is a thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that because I'm sure they're giddy about the fact that you know that they can regulate that in Patriot mode.
I like this
Patriot games.
Which Bill Belichick press conferences are back, which is my favorite thing. One of my
Did
favorite
you see
things about football
after the game last night.
They were asking him about the play calling.
And yeah. And who's calling it and when the decision's going to be made.
They're platooning offensive coordinators. Yeah. It's fascinating.
we'll handle that in time.
He told one guy, don't worry about it.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about all that.
I love
we'll
Belichick.
Take care of that.
I really do. I love it. Anyways, is Brandon Cooks the sign that he's just destroying everybody? Most underrated player for the Houston Texans. Is that a sign that, okay, Brandon Cooks going to have a good year. Davis Mills is going to look good. That Pep Hamilton offense is going to look good. Or do you think it's a more of a testament to the defense maybe not being as good?
I mean, to me, we don't know until we see him play real football. But, like, I'm not willing to pass judgment on either one of those things. I don't think there's any reason to criticize the defense. I think we all agree they got better in the secondary. They added a bunch of young pieces that could only or should only make them better. I think that when you go against your own team, it's different than when you go against an opponent. And in week three of the preseason, if I see Brandon Cooks just blowing the doors off of people and doing what people are reporting he's been doing consistently at training camp, then there's reason to have even more excitement about this offense. I think that the only thing I take away from it, and we've been big on what you should and shouldn't be concerned with at training camp on a daily basis, is giving Davis Mills the best chance to succeed. If Brandon Cooks looking better than even people give him credit for means that your young quarterback has a really good receiver to throw to,
mm-hmm.
then that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about the fact that if Nico Collins can take a step up and become better in year two, that you've got two guys now that your quarterback should have confidence in throwing to that could make your offense better. But I'm not going to sit there. Brandon Cooks is who Brandon Cooks is, and he's been a really good receiver in this league. But there's also probably a reason why he's been with as many teams as he's been with. But we know now he's in a place that he likes to be, that obviously the regime loves him. And because he's a culture guy.
Yeah.
He's a locker room guy. So let's hope it continues.
Look, I think Cooks is a good football player. I think I say this all the time. I feel like he's a bottom tier wide receiver one. He's on the wide receiver one ledger, but it's towards the bottom. He's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. He's not Cooper Kupp. But he's a lot better than everybody else's number twos. Like he's bottom 10 teams, number one receiver. So I don't think he's like... he's not a Houston Texan number one because he's not a number one in the league. I firmly believe he's one of the best 32 receivers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like Davis Mills, is he one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the world? I tend to think yes. But Brandon Cooks, relative to his position, is better than anything else the Texans have outside of Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil is one of the top 10 left tackles in football. Brandon Cooks probably one of the top 25
receivers. Brandon Cooks better on your Houston Texas team, or would you have been better served by trading him?
Well, see, that's that's a loaded question because you got to tell me what you're getting in return. Like if the trade offers for
second
Brandon Cooks,
pick and
I would have done it for a second rounder.
I think I would have.
But if all I'm getting in return is a fourth rounder, I'm better off keeping
right.
Brandon Cooks.
No, I agree.
And I think that the evaluation of Davis Mills is important here too. Like keeping Laramie Tunsil around does help me get a better idea of who Davis Mills is going to be. Keeping Brandon Cooks around does give me a better idea of who Davis Mills is going to be. Now, I'm not going to surrender getting really good draft capital for Tunsil and or Cooks because of Davis Mills. If I was getting a second rounder for either one of those guys, I'm doing that. I believe Nick Caserio kicked tires on trading Cooks
but
and Tunsil, but didn't get an
fair?
Offer that he liked.
If you want a true evaluation of Davis Mills,
no, it's
and we've
not.
Talked about yeah, I don't think that's fair to Davis but, Mills either. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because you get what you need to continue to rebuild. But then are you selling short one of the biggest things you need in a rebuild, which is figuring out who your quarterback is?
I don't think it's fair to Davis Mills, but I also think it gives us the answer that we want about Davis Mills. If Nick Caserio was doing that, if Nick Caserio is like, okay, we don't need a left tackle to protect the quarterback, it's telling you that they don't really think of their quarterback as much of an investment. If they don't have a number one wide receiver, they're telling you that we don't think of Davis Mills as that critical of an investment. So, like, this is actually pro Davis Mills. The fact that they kept Tunsil, the fact that they kept Cooks. Okay, let's evaluate this guy. Let's give this guy a fair shot. So I'm good keeping them around. As far as the question of, like, Cooks toasting the defense, Brandon Cooks has been in this league for a long time, and he's one of the best 20, 25 receivers in the entire world. I'm not expecting Derek Stingley Jr. from day one to be able to shadow that dude and lock him down. So I'm not looking at it as a testament to the Texans' defense being poor. Jordan Davis, the rookie from Georgia, the big, mean nose tackle, 522-pound dude that runs a 4.3 40 out of Georgia. There was a viral video on Twitter about him just like crushing an offensive lineman. Bull rush dude just backed him right into the quarterback. And they asked him about it after, I guess, the preseason game or just after practice. And he's like, you know what? That's one play. That's not a fair testament to me as a player,
good for him.
To my teammate as a player. He's like, you didn't get the other 25 plays where he beat me. So, like, this is kind of what I see in camp. Okay, somebody tweets something that they want to hear about, and they retweet it. So, like, if let's just say that Houston Texans fans in general, they want to see Davis Mills have a good play. Okay, so somebody tweets, Davis Mills threw a 25-yard touchdown. The very next tweet, Davis Mills threw an interception. Which one's getting the most retweets, likes, and impressions?
Probably the interception.
Even though it's a net wash. I think it's the touchdown. I think it's the other way. I think they crave positivity.
Well, in the past, remember, the worst, everybody goes back to, what was the maybe the worst day of practice in a training camp of quarterback ever had?
I think it's a different timeline, though. It's different.
That's fair.
One, he was a rookie, and no one really thought much of him at the time. Where, like, the idea of Davis Mills actually being a franchise quarterback now is like, okay, the Texans might have their guy. I'm excited about Davis Mills. A year ago in training camp, no one thought Davis Mills should have been drafted by the Texans.
Yeah, and then they thought they were trying to illustrate and magnify the fact that they screwed up drafting this kid because he was that bad. And that's a narrative that the media wants to jump on because they know they're going to get reaction to it. So, no, I hear what you're saying. Look, I think when I look at that and I see that, I think a lot of times in the dog days of training camp too, it's very tough to get a veteran to get motivated about anything in training camp. But if a veteran lines up alongside a rookie number one pick that is looking to try and establish that he's going to be a shutdown corner, now you got a little extra juice. Now you're a little extra motivated. Now you use a little couple tricks of the trade that he hasn't learned yet, and you decide to, you know, spin him like a top and show that, you know, who's king. I think those are the kind of things you can see in training camp. But that's why I said it doesn't mean anything to me until you're starting to do it against top line competition on other teams, both from a Cooks, Stingley, everybody's positions, right? I don't care about what, you know, Davis Mills can do in a shell and how he's ripping it around and making throws. That's great.
Yeah, he's going to play in the preseason.
It's better than the alternative, but I really want to see what he does against teams in other uniforms.
I've been out there. I've seen Stingley. He looks the part. Like, again, you're not going to really tell. They thought Jamar Chase was going to suck last year because there wasn't the stripe on the tip of the football like in college. That was not a very good take, right? They thought Justin Jefferson was the number three receiver in Minnesota his rookie year, and he was lights out. So, training camp reports don't carry much stock to me. Now, I took this soundbite from Lovie Smith that he had the other day talking about Derek Stingley, and I actually found this to be more encouraging than any report or any, like, 10-second video of Derek Stingley Jr. from training camp.
Good plays he made today. Great one would have been him catching that interception and running and scoring with it. But we like everything Derek's done since he came in the building.
Here's why I think that there's something actually there. And tell me if I'm reading too much into this.
Okay.
You have Lovie Smith, who's talking about a rookie that just took number three. If they didn't like Derek Stingley Jr. a whole lot, they wouldn't say something that was borderline critical. A great play would have been intercepting it. That, to me, is Lovie Smith noticing that already as a rookie, Derek Stingley Jr. is a good player. Yep. They think that Derek Stingley Jr. is going to be a great player. And I think that even though he just talked about, like, it was this little subtle hint that who knows if Derek Stingley Jr. is even going to see it. It tells me that Lovie Smith's philosophy on Derek Stingley Jr. is that cat's got a chance to be really good, and I got to coach it into him.
Well, and using all of the potential ways that you have to reach a player is, and Van Gundy was the king of this, pointing it out through the media because you know the word's going to get back that, hey, you made a good play. It would have been a better play if you picked it off.
Yep.
To basically say, I know you got talent, kid, but I'm here to get the most talent I can out of you. And the next step for you is to not be like singing your own praises or reading your own press clippings on what a great play it was, but make the catch the next time.
And even, like, think about it, too. If he was struggling, if Derek Stingley Jr. was having what they thought was a bad camp, they were kind of questioning the pick.
You wouldn't hear the second
You don't hear a challenge.
Nope, you don't hear
you don't hear a challenge of like, it was a good play. He's a good player. But there was a great play there. If he was struggling in camp, you do not hear that.
That's absolutely a fact. Because the last thing you want to do is further demoralize or crush a guy that's down on his luck, especially with as much attention as a number one pick gets. And you're right. You're right. Total agreement. You don't get the second part of that if he was absolutely having a crap camp.
So at the DMV today, I took a deep dive. I had time on my hands. I had 90 minutes to do a little bit of a deep dive. So I did a deep dive on quarterbacks in the NFL.
People that have showered the night before when they go to the DMV. I thought that was the deep dive.
I felt like I didn't shower this morning when I left the DMV.
I could believe that.
I feel like I need one now.
Sanitizer?
If I stink, my bad.
Did you sanitize?
No, but the lady in the front
did. You left
did.
That in the car, too, when it got stolen and didn't come back?
I did leave hand sanitizer in the car. Yeah, I like to use it after I pump gas. Anyways, I did a deep dive on the Super Bowl quarterback participants in the last 10 years. Where do you need from a quarterback? Do you need him to be in the top 10 to be a Super Bowl caliber team, or do you not? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so I did a deep dive in the DMV today. I figured let me make my time useful. Let me do something that, you know, we can talk about on the radio. And what I did was, we've had this argument quite a bit: how to build a Super Bowl caliber team, a team that can reach the Super Bowl. What do you need from the quarterback position in order to be a Super Bowl caliber team? And like, people always say, well, look, you know, Trent Dilfer, he did a good job with Baltimore. So good of a job that the Ravens moved on for him the very following season, and that was two decades ago. People look at Jim McMahon in 1986. I was 1 year old back then. Whenever
Sexy Rexy, too, for the Bears.
Sexy Rexy got there with Lovie. When was that? Probably 03-ish, somewhere around then.
So maybe that is
a long time ago. A long time ago. So let's look at the last 10 years. Last 10 years, Super Bowl quarterbacks that played in the game that you would consider either top 10 or not top 10. Because in my opinion, the easiest way to build a Super Bowl caliber team and to sustain a Super Bowl caliber team is to find a top 10 quarterback. Pat Mahomes is going to be a Super Bowl caliber team no matter who's around him for the next decade. Same thing with Josh Allen. Aaron Rodgers has been that way forever. Tom Brady has more Super Bowl wins than any organization in NFL history. So I feel like quarterback, even though they're hard to find, you have to aggressively pursue what you think will be a top 10 quarterback. And if you fail, you do it again the very next year. Look, Rick Smith gets criticized a lot in this city. He went out and tried to find his quarterback in Brock Osweiler. Amazing failure. Did not work. What did he do the very next draft? He traded for Deshaun Watson. So you have to aggressively pursue, in my mind, top 10 quarterbacks. Last year, quarterbacks that were playing in the Super Bowl. Rams with Matthew Stafford. I think he was a top 10 quarterback last year.
He was.
Joe Burrow, who I think everybody would consider to be a top 10 quarterback last year. Mm-hmm. All right, so there we go. 2020. Tom Brady, fair to say he was a top 10 quarterback?
He's okay.
He's all right. Pat Mahomes, fair to say he's top 10 quarterback?
Some people think he's already the greatest of all time.
All right, there you go. 2019, it was the Chiefs and the 49ers. You have Mahomes again, top 10 quarterback. Yep. Jimmy Garoppolo, who I think it's fair to say was not a top 10 quarterback. There's your very first one. 2018, again, you have Tom Brady with the Patriots, a top 10 quarterback. We've already described that. Jared Goff with the Rams.
Not.
I would say not, too. He was very good with the Rams, but I would say he was outside of the top 10, and Sean McVay helped him a lot. Sean McVay helped him a lot. 2017, Nick Foles.
Nope.
No, I wouldn't even think he was the top 40 quarterback in the entire world. Certainly not
starting,
top 10.
So no.
Yeah, no. Carson Wentz was the starting quarterback on that team.
33.
Tom Brady.
Yep.
Okay, Tom Brady was the losing side of that Super Bowl back in 2017. How about Tom Brady again? You notice Tom Brady's on this list a lot.
Of a pattern there.
How about Matt Ryan whenever he lost to Tom Brady?
At the time, he was
the MVP, top 10 quarterback. 2015, you had Peyton Manning against Cam Newton.
Is that the one where Peyton was with the Broncos? Then
he was a shell of himself. He was terrible. I'll give you that one. Outside of the top 10.
At the time.
Cam Newton, though, at the time.
Was MVP.
Yes. So Cam Newton would be, yes, top 10 quarterback. 2014, you had Tom Brady versus Russell Wilson.
Yes, yes.
At the time, that is a yes, yes. 2013, you had Russell Wilson and what at the time was a good Peyton Manning.
You're selling me on him, but you don't have to. Yes, yes.
On who, Russ or Peyton?
No, when you said, but at the time, he was good. I get it.
And then 2012 was the Joe Flacco, Colin Kaepernick, lights go out in the Superdome.
No, no?
I'll go no, no. No, no. No argument there at all. So the last 20 Super Bowl quarterbacks in the last 10 years, 14 of them have been what would you would call a top 10 quarterback versus six that are not. So the idea that you can win with this middling quarterback, mid quarterback, what the kids are saying, whatever you want to, like middle of the road, average pedestrian QB. It can be done, but just not as likely.
There's basically, I would break it into three categories who have played quarterback in the Super Bowl over the last 20 years. About a third of them are top 10 quarterbacks.
14 of them are.
About a third of them are not top 10 quarterbacks. About a third of them are Tom Brady.
Well, so, yes, that's also very true.
Jeremy has found the path to making the Super
Bowl.
That's
also a good point. It's very valid.
But I think Tom Brady can be an example there. Like, okay, eliminate the Tom Brady's. Tom Brady got to how many Super Bowls that we just said? Seven, I think. One, two, three. In the last 10 years, he's been to four.
Is five, it really that
five,
few?
Five. He's been to five. So take Tom Brady.
One, right?
Take losing didn't matter here. This
I know, but he got, but yeah.
But I think it goes outside 10 years, too, right? Like, when was the first one that Tom Brady won? It was longer than 10 years ago. That first little Patriot dynasty when he was young was longer than 10 years ago.
And the next Super Bowl just outside of the sample size was also Tom Brady.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Tom Brady on this list. But this sample size, last 20 Super Bowl quarterbacks, even if you eliminate Tom Brady, you still have nine top 10 quarterbacks versus six that were not. And it's also eliminating Tom Brady. Like, who else takes the spot? I would argue a top 10 quarterback.
And that's where you're also going to delineate between Texans fans that just want winning again, but don't want to get specifically enough to say it has to be Super Bowl or bust. I think there's a good portion of this fan base that just wants them to win again, win the division, get in the playoffs, compete, but that's good enough for them. And then there's the hardcores, the diehards that have been there, done that before that say, I want to go where we've never been before. I want to get to and win an AFC championship. Yeah. I want to get to and win a Super Bowl.
And I think if that is the logic and that's the philosophy, which I would argue if it's not, what in the world are you doing? Then you need
in
to aggressively attack.
Too, right? If you're in a different market, it's a different scenario.
And who's the guy running it? It's Nick Caserio. You think Nick Caserio settled for second place after he was at the New England dynasty under Bill Belichick? Absolutely not. Nick Caserio is looking to build a champion however long it takes.
Can I give the other pushback on this?
Of course.
Matt Ryan was not viewed as a top 10 quarterback before that season.
He was literally the best player that year.
No, I know.
And he probably was in the conversation as a top 10 quarterback.
I don't know if he'd won a playoff game before that year.
But he was always a guy that put up huge numbers. He had Julio Jones, which also helped. But
he
was definitely on the cusp of a top 10 quarterback.
He had more than Julio Jones, too. He had
Julio was the
Roddy White.
Roddy White.
He was on the cusp of top 10.
Yeah, right there on the brand.
That's fair. But I think that's where Matt Ryan was. I think that's where Matt Stafford was. And I think if you took Super Bowls away from Russell Wilson, that's where he would have been. The success lifts guys up. At that point in his career, early on, they didn't win on the back of Russell Wilson.
They ran on defense.
I don't know about that.
He was a very good quarterback.
Russell Wilson still right now was just outside of our top 10 and most people's top 10, and he's 34 years old. He was a perennial top 10 quarterback for a decade.
He did it with his legs at a very, very high rate back then.
And I'm not a
his
Russell Wilson guy.
His deep ball was unbelievable. I'm not either, but you have to give him his credit.
In 2014, which is the year they played in the Super Bowl, I don't know if they won that one or lost that one, he threw 20 touchdowns in 16 games. I'm not arguing he wasn't.
But you do what you have to do, right? If you're playing from behind or you're trying to win a close game or a high-scoring game, then your touchdowns go way up. If your defense is kicking ass and taking names, you just don't turn it over and you do what you need to do to win.
The point I'm making,
I get what you're making,
is that winning Super Bowls has lifted these guys after the fact.
And to argue your point, I would go even a step further, where I would say, the Matt Ryans of the world, which can be debatable, the Jared Goff, who we had outside of the top 10, but I think kind of fits into the point that you're trying to make, Stafford, who we considered a top 10 quarterback, Cam Newton, who we considered a top 10 quarterback, those are guys who at their peak were top 10, but for most of their career probably were not.
That's exactly the point I'm making. And I think that I have to be in the middle to an extent and say, not everybody gets lifted by getting there, right? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't lifted by making it to a Super Bowl. You have to be at least in the range where it's conceivable you could get lifted, but we give so much credit to winning that if you haven't done it yet, it's a lot harder to be viewed in the top 10. Not saying it's impossible.
I don't know about that. Dan Marino is top 10 every single year. Dan Marino
Jeremy,
went to one Super Bowl.
Stick to right now, though, as you're doing with the Super Bowls. I'm not saying it's impossible. I think it is a lot harder to get put on that top 10 list until you start
winning. Okay, top 10 quarterbacks right now that a lot of people would consider top 10. We didn't have Lamar Jackson in our top 10, and people got roasted. He's never been to a Super Bowl. Deshaun Watson, many people consider him a top 10 quarterback, never has been to a Super Bowl. Josh Allen, top 10 quarterback, has never been to a Super Bowl.
Sure, they haven't. Yeah, you're right. They haven't won at that level. I do think you have to win to some level in the postseason before, like, we really start taking you seriously as a top 10 quarterback.
I think getting to a Super Bowl takes you from like being in a top 10 to now where you're like, okay, you're on elite status.
You're anointed, right? To a different level. You've taken it to another level. It's like the Matt Ryan argument. Matt Ryan was always someone that people gave maybe too much credit to, but knew he had the ability. But he validated everything with the run that he went on, not just the regular season, but to do what he did and get all the way to where he got. That kind of validated everything previous and set him up for his future.
It completely changed the conversation about him. The conversation about Matt Ryan to that point in time was that he wasn't as good as people thought. The conversation was, this guy can't win in the postseason.
Yeah, and the same
and
thing
that
with Stafford.
His weapons made him who he was, not him making them
and
better.
We don't look at that at all anymore.
And the same thing with Stafford, too. But that's two guys. That's two guys. So, like, even if you eliminate them from the conversation, it's 12-6.
I still enter Russell Wilson into that conversation. I know you guys give me pushback.
11-7. Like, and I, look, the overwhelming, like, my biggest takeaway from doing this is like, okay, there is more than one way to cook an egg. I understand that. I think the best tasting egg, the one that gives you more success, is to have that top 10 quarterback. It doesn't prevent you from being a Super Bowl contender.
But it also does paint the picture to set the guidelines of, you don't have to be a top 10 quarterback every year, but if you just do it for that one year, That's the biggest thing.
But also look at the repeat offenders and look at them being a Super Bowl contender literally for almost their entire career. Brady, Super Bowl contender, almost his entire career. Pat Mahomes, Super Bowl contender, his entire career. Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson's an argument, but it's a guy who had multiple Super Bowl appearances.
It's hard to argue with me, Russell.
Go get the quarterback. Go get the quarterback. Don't stick with the 15th best quarterback in the NFL and have to build this once-in-a-generation team around him, which in a salary cap era is very difficult to keep together. Go get the quarterback. It's the path that is the easiest to get to the Super Bowl.
With all these Davis Mills truthers is, even if he plays decent, he plays well, nothing should preclude you from going out and drafting another guy. And then regardless of when you get the value or the return on the guy that didn't win the starting job for you and whatever you get in return, you made the best decision for your franchise.
And even, look, it could be Davis Mills. I'm not just totally eliminating that either. If Davis Mills goes out and looks like he's a top 10 quarterback this year, okay, that's Davis Mills. Like, this isn't a study to try to prove a point against Davis Mills. It's you need a top 10 quarterback. It's either Davis Mills playing to that level or you go out and attack it. Another, like, league-wide, like, looking at this from an outside of a Texans perspective, but looking at it from, like, an NFL perspective and just, like, a quarterback evaluation, scrambling quarterbacks are overrated. You don't need a scrambling quarterback to be a Super Bowl team. Tom Brady's the perfect example of that. Peyton Manning, perfect example of that. Stafford, Ryan, we can go down this list. There's not many scrambling quarterbacks that have been playing in the Super Bowl for the last decade.
Well, that's true, too. Look, that's why, though, look, and I guess I had a firsthand look at Russell Wilson. That's why I'll argue for Russell Wilson, because I've seen Russell Wilson in his prime and what that prime was like, and the fact that when we talk about run pass option, when we talk about athleticism, when we talk about from throwing the deep ball to making the right read to making the tough pass to doing all the things that he did, Russell Wilson, and then there's another guy, I think he actually validated it for his career with him doing what they needed to do offensively just to supplement and complement the Legion of Boom defensively, to where I don't know that you can question Russell Wilson in my mind.
713-780-ESPN. Do you need a top 10 quarterback in order to be a Super Bowl contender in the NFL? 713-780-3776. Also, that Astros pitching magic we've talked about for a very long time, that has not gone away. We saw it with Justin Verlander, of course. Are we seeing it with Will Smith? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. We'll get to that Astros pitching magic with Will the Thrill Smith in just a moment. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, though. 713-780-ESPN. ESPN. Ray, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Ray?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Just sports. Ray, what's on your mind? Yeah, we can hear you. What's on your mind, man?
Yeah, like, I don't think you need a top 10 quarterback to win a Super Bowl moving forward. Just FYI, I'm a New England fan. I just moved to Houston a couple of weeks ago. But
Ray, let me ask you a question. What? Are the Patriots winning all those Super Bowls without Tom Brady?
That is a very good question. I think it always goes back down to, is it Brady or is it Belichick?
I think it's pretty clear that it's Brady. Brady won one in Tampa. What has Belichick done post-Brady?
The point about it is the fact that Belichick, no matter who Belichick has, he is going to get everything out of him. And whether it's a 10-year receiver or a 5-year running back, no matter what it is or what position he needs, he always get 150% out of him, whether they're down on their last team or they had injuries that no one didn't want him to come back on their team, and he pulls out of him. But on the other hand, Brady has done it. And I've listened to you guys every day. And, yeah, the exception of the 199 pick is one of those things where it's out of the blue moment.
Appreciate the call, Ray. Look, I love Bill Belichick. I would trade a first-round draft pick for Belichick.
Team,
what's that?
I don't appreciate his favorite team.
You don't like the Pats?
Never have.
They ever beat the Pack in the Super Bowl?
No. Well, that was the Packers' fault for not getting there.
Tom Brady won a lot of Super Bowls in New England.
Yep.
Was it Brady or was it Belichick?
I think it was a combination. I really do. But I think that, look, you know what? The argument seems to be stronger for you can win Brady, not Belichick, but I don't think you can win Belichick, not Brady.
I think it's pretty clear what's happened after Brady's left.
Well,
Brady's lifted the Lombardi. Belichick has done what?
Yeah, but, I mean, the Patriots went into almost full rebuild after that. I think that if Brady would have stayed with New England, they probably would have still gone veteran-laden, free agency-built roster.
That last Brady team that he was with, the Patriots team that Brady was on, was not very good. Like, they didn't really lose a whole lot the very next year when they went with Cam Newton at quarterback.
See, but they made the playoffs with Mac Jones.
This past season.
Yeah. So, I mean, he did something to be able to coach a guy in his rookie year and get his team all the way to the playoffs, too. And that roster wasn't all that would knock you off your feet when you looked at it either. That's why I understand what people are going to make when they make that argument. But look, Brady got surrounded, went to a team where he knew he was going to a team that was already built to win. And then they just fortified it. And he went out and got five of his buddies that made it even better than that, to where it was loaded for bear no matter what. Because the argument could have been made with that team of one with Brady and without Brady, too, in Tampa. So that's why I say it was a little of both.
They couldn't have won with Jameis Winston.
No. I mean, but there's a big difference between somebody else and Jameis Winston when he throws 30 picks.
I love Belichick so much that I think I'm going to go make a futures bet whenever I punch the clock tonight. We're going to play Who Said It in 11 minutes. So if you want to go toe-to-toe with the Killer Bees, just be cognizant.
We're
of
salty.
That. Be aware of
we
that.
We lost last
that's
week.
That's right. We did lose the last
my
week.
My fault. I take the blame.
Yeah, it was your fault.
You let
us down. I was putting the team on my back. I think that's why my back's a little sore today.
Because you tried to do the unthinkable, and you actually were carrying the plan out for a change.
I was just putting you on my back for Who Said It.
For a change.
And we're going to be doing that in 10 minutes against a lucky listener, although we're going to make them feel unlucky.
Where the
hell's
not Santa?
Astros are starting to work their magic on Will the Thrill Smith. Justin Verlander was on the YouTube yesterday. He was on the YouTube during that Rangers-Astros game.
Oh, that's right. We were reading the closed captioning while we were doing our show.
Yeah, so I went back and you can go back on YouTube and watch that game again if you so desire. But I went back and listened to the interview that Justin Verlander had in the fourth inning with YouTube TV, and he was talking about the genius that is the Houston Astro pitching philosophy.
I mean, one of the things when I first got to Houston, and you know, everybody asked what changed and what advice they had, and really it was pretty simplistic. You know, the analytic department and I sat down, and they basically said, "Okay, here's your two seam, and here's your four seam. Your two seam is pretty average, and your four seam is one of the best in the world. So use that more, and use the other one less."
That's the philosophy for the Houston Astros. That's that you just can't replicate it for anybody else. We were worried that Brent Strom was going to retire and take away that Astros pitching philosophy that worked so well forever, and that the Astros pitching staff was just never going to be the same. We were worried that Arizona was going to turn into this pitching juggernaut, that the law firm of Murphy and Miller would never live and never fill the big shoes that is Brent Strom. The Astros pitching philosophy that is unmatched, that is better than anybody else. Stop doing what you suck at.
Yeah, look. It's I don't think it's that simple.
Is it not? Verlander, stop throwing your two-seam. Throw the four-seam more. Will Smith, who has a 2.25 ERA for the Astros, throw the curveball.
He's not going to give you too many secrets. He's not going to give too much away. He oversimplified it. But I think that, look, there's something to be said about what he started out with, which is the analytics department, and then how that translates by getting coaches that also believe in the analytics and the philosophy and then know how to teach it. And then it can also be simplified from time to time by saying they did the exact same thing with Urquidy. Yeah. Told him a pitch he shouldn't throw.
Stop throwing your cutter.
Told him a pitch he should throw more. And I get that, but I think that there is a variety of reasons that go into it. And one of them is it's more. We're finding out more and more, as much as we all love Brent Strom, that maybe Brent Strom was one of the guys that kind of bridged the gap between the analytics to the actual teaching and coaching of pitching, to where it all made sense. And now the law firm gets it and they can teach it too. And it's like, you know, the sensei, and you've turned it over to your successors. I just think that they've got a system that works better than most teams. They find things with their pitchers, and I don't think it's as simple as saying throw this, not that.
I think it is. And there's information that backs it up. Look when Justin Verlander.
But the spin
Verlander,
rates on all these guys go up, too. You can look at some of that data.
Justin Verlander, go look at the amount of times that he was throwing a two-seam in Detroit. Look how many two-seams he threw with Houston. It disappeared. Jose Urquidy, the cutter. He's literally not throwing it since June 8th.
But you can look at Garrett Cole or Charlie Morton and say their spin rates way up.
Look, I'm not saying this is the only thing that they do, but one of the things that the Astros do well and makes them so smart and geniuses is stop doing what you suck at. And we're literally seeing it right now with Will Smith. First couple of appearances with the Astros, probably hadn't worked with the pitching staff all that closely. He was still throwing the curveball a little bit. His last appearance, I don't think he threw it at all. He's not throwing the curveball. And if you look at the numbers, his curveball versus his two other pitches, his curveball gets shelled. He's got an opponent batting average of .500 against his curveball this year. Stop doing what you suck at, do what you're good at, and watch your numbers go through the roof.
But it's also depending on who the actual player you're dealing with is, too. When you're dealing with a guy with the skins on the wall that Verlander has, I don't know. And you're also probably concerned about how much he wants to take and can take, about people telling him how to do things better than he's done it. But when you're talking about the four or five young pitchers that you're grooming and bringing up, it's a hell of a lot easier to start teaching them to throw a pitch a different way and concentrate on spinning the ball more here or doing that there, and way you're thinking through it too. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, and I, at least I'm glad he gave them credit for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Verlander's talked about that quite a bit. It was just something that kind of resurfaced, but we're seeing it right now with Will Smith, where it's like, okay, you know, you were a good pitcher. Last year, you were fine. I mean, last year in the playoffs, you were terrific. You were really good. You're the best reliever in all of the postseason. Had been poor this year, and people were like, oh, you gave up Odorizzi for this slappy, for this terrible loogie, and he's been pretty good for your team. He's 2.25 ERA for your team.
Well, Dusty plays him, too.
He does. He
gives him a chance
four times out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
So, look, to me, it's one of the best luxuries that the Astros have, and it's good to see the numbers this year backing it up, because there was worry when Brent Strom left that the pitching numbers were going to go down, that the Astros pitching staff was not going to be as good, that they lost their, you know, they lost their dude who can sprinkle a little bit of magic on the pitching staff and all of a sudden make Garrett Cole a really good pitcher to a Cy Young, can make Lance McCullers from a high potential guy into an all-star and a Cy Young contender. And the fact that the Astros, look, they have the best ERA, best bullpen ERA in baseball. They have the best starters ERA in baseball. The fact that you're seeing it without Brent Strom, with new pitching coaches, is it's great to see, especially whenever you have such young pitchers still in this organization. So that pitching isn't going anywhere. And Todd, the show, mentioning on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Brent Strom told us this. Brent Strom, before he left, said, look, all those young pitchers are really, really Murphy and Miller's proteges. They're the ones that are working with them more than I am. So it's good to see that. It's good to look, sometimes I'm a huge subscriber in the KISS method, the KISS philosophy. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, keep your car title inside the house. Keep it simple. Look, get rid of things that you're bad at. Highlight and magnify the things that you're good at, and let's see how it works. Justin Verlander did it in 2017, and it revitalized his career. And we're seeing it now with Will Smith, where, you know, this curveball you have is lousy. People are crushing it. Dudes are hitting .500 against this curveball. Why don't you stop throwing a pitch that dudes are crushing? Okay, I'll do that. Now my numbers are going to get better.
And like I said, everybody's different, and I think everybody it kind of goes to, and one of the national broadcasts recently talked about this too, and that's how I relate it to. It's the relatable, right? If you've got a young, aspiring pitcher that hasn't been there and done that yet, they're going to be open to pretty much anything and everything because they're trying to establish themselves with your organization, with your coaching staff, have people that are going to start believing and trusting in them. So you're going to be open to all that. If you're Scherzer or you're Verlander or you're these guys that, you know, we already heard the stories about don't talk to me on game days and, you know, don't do this and don't do that. Even Smoltz was talking about this last night that, you know, he tried to be a little bit different than those guys back then. But it's harder to kind of broach a subject with them. I give them credit for being able to get Verlander to do that, but I think Verlander also realized he was at a point in his career.
Yeah, see, I think Verlander's more of a student of a game. I think all of that stuff is true day of. Like, okay, I'm going to work on my craft every other day when I'm not pitching.
But
the day
I'm pitching. If you go out and trade for a guy that's an established veteran, but if you go out and sign Scherzer, that's the same way where Dave Roberts said, I found out the hard way when I said something to Scherzer dugout.
That's day of, though. That was the day that he was pitching.
But even still, I think that if a video guy or one of the pitching coaches came and said to Max Scherzer, hey, we want to sit down with you. We see some things you're doing wrong that we think you should do differently. Some of these guys will tell him to go F off.
Maybe so, but not Verlander. Verlander's always been very open to that stuff.
I think it also says something about the fact that the Tigers analytics and video department probably was way behind the time.
Yeah, Astros they're brilliant analytics. Stop doing what you're bad at. 713-780-ESPN. Who said it is next, where the Killer Bees go toe-to-toe with a listener. We ask you five quotes. You have to guess which ESPN personality said it. If you want to go toe-to-toe with the Killer Bees, here is your chance. 713-780-3776. It's you versus the Killer Bees and who said it. 713-780-3776. We do it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.